Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report with me, John Adarola, and returning once again, Viviana V. Hill. Welcome to The Damage Report.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Wish it was all sunshine and flowers news for you, but unfortunately it's not. It's been a bit of a rough period in terms of international news. Obviously, they're talking about the chaos in Afghanistan, which we'll be talking about in a moment. But I mean, that came after a couple of solid weeks of, it seemed like there were natural disasters hitting every corner of the earth, fires and floods and all of that. So it's been a bit of a rough period, but how have you been?
I've been actually pretty good. It's been a little crazy here in Los Angeles with the numbers going up in COVID. I've had several friends vaccinated and not getting this Delta variant. Personally, I was vaccinated in early January. So I'm actually really interested in the booster shots, when I can get it, continuing to protect my family members. I have a 96-year-old grandmother. I have an 83-year-old father. So like I'm a little bit concerned about those kinds of things. But other than that, things are going pretty well. I was telling you earlier before we went live about my dog saving me from a rat. He's almost 15. He's geriatric, but he's still got it.
He's still got a few moves left. Okay, that's good.
He's still got a few.
You know what? Speaking of dogs, I can still, I don't know if people can hear them. I can hear the two dogs that I have in the studio walking around. So perhaps at the end of the program, if we get enough likes on the stream, I will show you one or both dogs. But we also already know that I will never remember that. So I'm gonna put it on Sophie, the producer who's on right now. If she reminds me at the end of the show, I'll do that. If not, it's her. She hates dogs. Why? Maybe we'll do a poll eventually. But anyway, thank you everybody for being here. I'm totally joking. She loves dogs. Anyway, thank you everybody for being here. We've got a lot of news planned for you over the next 90 minutes. And you know what's coming up after those 90 minutes? I know what you're thinking, indisputable, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, and that is true. But also with me, I'll be joining him for Indisputable, so that should be a lot of fun. But anyway, as we go through this process, if you wouldn't mind hitting that like button, sharing the stream, that'd be great. And you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, all of that, and we'll respond as we go. But with that said, Viviana, are you ready to jump into this?
Roll it, John.
Okay, let's do it. No, that was the best response to that question I think I've ever gotten from a co-host, but unfortunately it's to lead into this story. So,
Sorry about that.
Save that for like the Tony Hawk thing we're doing later.
You know what, John? Let us have it. We're dying to know this information, so I'm sorry about that.
Okay, let's do it. No. You're not in the wrong. Anyway, as I am sure you're aware, as we are doing this show live, we are getting the early information from the at least two explosions that rocked the airport in Kabul. It was also, there was gunplay as well in the area. And we're gonna give you these initial details, but understand that anything we say here should be taken with a grain of salt, because details, you know, sometimes clash between sources and it can be controverted by information that comes out later. So, bearing all that in mind, at least two blasts rattled the area outside Hamid Karzai International Airport in Kabul on Thursday, according to the Pentagon. Just hours after there were warnings that you might have seen, that itself was breaking news, that they were asking for people to leave the area because they thought some sort of threat was imminent. Now, we don't know exactly the numbers of injured or dead. Reporters in a nearby emergency room said that at least 20 people had been brought to the site. And so, as I said, this followed up warnings. The US Embassy in Kabul had advised citizens to avoid traveling to the airport and said those already at the gates should leave immediately, citing unspecified security threats. And a senior US official had warned last night, our time, of a specific incredible threat by an affiliate of the Islamic State Khorasan, or ISIS-K, against the airport. Despite such a specific warning, considering the crowds of literally thousands of people, if it was a suicide bomber, and we don't know for sure that it was, it is easy to understand how difficult it would be to actually find a person in all of that chaos. And it's a terrible situation because, of course, you know, they get the intelligence about a possible attack, Viviana, and they want to clear people out, but those people are terrified about not being able to get out of the country. They understand that there's only a few days left where the US is, as of right now at least, going to be involved in getting people out. They might worry that if they leave that area, they'll be at more risk of the Taliban doing something to them. But if they stay, you know, this, something like this could happen, and indeed did. So Why don't we bring up this map as we talk a little bit more? You'll be able to see a bit of the geography of the area. But Viviana, you know, bearing in mind that of course this just happened, what are your thoughts?
I mean, immediately, you know, my heart, it's horrific. My heart goes out to everyone who's affected by this. The fear alone, even if you weren't at the airport when this happened, just the fear alone of being in this kind of destabilized area. You know, it's really just, and I know you've talked about it before, it's just like, this is what US imperialism does. I mean, this is what happens when we do not care about people of a country. We looked at the panic that set in here with people trying to buy toilet paper. I can't blame somebody for going to the airport. I can't blame somebody for saying, well, people left, people were flying out. You might have a chance. If you stay home, then that might be your last chance to get on that plane. Especially knowing that the US is continuing to, you know, close everything down and ship out literally. So I really, it's not an easy solution. You know, this is something that was started by the Trump administration, and don't for one second think that they weren't handing this power to the Taliban. And not that they're responsible for it, obviously, this explosion, but Biden is saying the buck stops here. But I feel like either side, blue and red, both have interest financially in this region. So whatever's happening is not by mistake. I just hope that Biden stays true to his word about the buck stopping there, and not with military support, but with the UN coming there for humanitarian aid. It's very sad to me when I see the ISIS-K soldiers. They're like 12 years old. They are so young. I don't know if you've seen any of the footage, John. I look at them and I'm just like, what is happening over here? These are young people fighting. I mean, they're following orders. We haven't seen what's really gonna play out here. And it's very, very upsetting. I was very upset to see that news this morning. We knew it was kind of coming though.
Yeah, and look, we're saying that that is who officials in the area are saying is responsible or is believed to be responsible, but we obviously have no idea, and I can't even assert to what extent the people relaying this information have any idea. It certainly seems credible, but it's not the only potential explanation for how this might have happened. I mean, the entire thing is madness. If you're, whether it was them or whether it was the Taliban, like in theory, the people that are fleeing are the people who don't share your values anyway. The whole thing is just obvious madness. Any sort of mass casualty, you know, incident like this is going to be. I wish that there had been a way that they could have, like beyond just warning people, that they could have protected them better. But I mean, we've known from the very beginning that you get this huge crowd of people together, and there was the possibility that something like this could happen. Particularly because of how the security situation there has changed from the fall of the Afghan government to now. So to demonstrate that a little bit, I want to go to a bit of video from reporter Charlie Dagata, who's in Kabul talking about what's happened.
We believe the attack happened at Abbey Gate, and that's where there are US and British soldiers on the inside perimeter of the airport. And you have Taliban forces and Afghan forces who are also trying to provide some level of protection around the airport itself. It is a large-ish complex place. There are four main entrances, as Ed was discussing earlier. But there are several roads reaching the airport, and especially now, it used to be a nightmare to get there because you'd have to go through 10 or 12 checkpoints, Afghan security checkpoints, to get anywhere near the airport. Obviously, those checkpoints are gone, and the U.S. and the Brits have done what they can to sort of reestablish an inner perimeter to that airport. But as far as the outside, it is permeable.
Yeah, and there were the explosions. There was gunfire. There is the possibility that there could be further attacks. There are still several days that this is going to be going on, and of course, the effort to get people out, or people trying to get out, is not going to stop as soon as the United States is no longer there or the soldiers back out. But I'm already worried about how, Viviana, how some in the US media will respond to this. I mean, the media coverage of Afghanistan has already been thick with people who are involved in getting us there and want us to be there for the rest of, you know, the rest of Earth, basically. And so they'll use this. They'll say, well, look, there's violence because we didn't expect that there would be violence. So, you know, we got to send more soldiers and that sort of thing. I expect that we're going to see a lot of people making that sort of case.
But to your point about not knowing for sure what exactly is going on over there right now, I do think our best bet of having truth and reporting is going to be now, before the Taliban takes over even more and starts controlling what news is being released. So, I feel like there are a lot of people who are okay with seeing this happen, even though in front of the cameras they're gonna say they're not. Nobody wants to see suffering of humans. I don't think that there's anyone out there going, yeah, that's what I want. But I do think that they think it's a necessary evil, because when you practice US imperialism, you are okay with this kind of violence taking place because the end justifies the means. And it's really sad we're gonna see a lot more. Yeah. And you know, the embassy, I feel like they might have known this was gonna happen already. The embassy said just yesterday, get away from Abbey Road. If you're there now, get out of there. I mean, it was listed there on the warning. And I can't expect for people to have taken that, you know, and just run with it, because what are your options? You know, especially you see there is some protection there. You see that there are some US forces still there. You see that there are Afghan forces, and you're hoping that that's going to protect you. I think there's more of this to come, and it's really horrific for the Afghanis.
Well, and again, these numbers are going to change, and sometimes things get reported and are, you know, totally reversed. But originally I had seen that 3 US Marines had been injured. Now I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal that 4 US Marines had been killed. The Taliban had said 13 people, including a child, had been killed, including some of their own soldiers had been injured, which is one of the things that's leading people to believe that it's ISIS-K rather than the Taliban, which seems to make sense. I don't think that's necessarily a lock, but so yeah, the death toll is, you know, going up every time we get more news out of this.
But the Taliban is actually known for creating these offshoots, so this might be within their plan as well, to kind of create more instability and more, well, look, we'll protect you from ISIS-K. We can do that. There's a lot going on here that we don't know yet.
Beyond, yeah, that's beyond my knowledge of the.
Yeah, we don't know. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what we do know, at least going into all of this, and this is information coming from before the 2 attacks. Obviously, there are a few more days where they're going to be trying to get people out of Kabul. An estimate had been put together trying to figure out how many people, in theory, might have directly aided the US occupation that might now be vulnerable and need to get out. That's obviously not everyone who is vulnerable, but it's the definition most in the media and you know, the government use. And so if you look at this, there's the current pace of the evacuation, and they believe that by the 31st, they'll have been able to get out 200,000 people potentially. As of like before this attack, we had gotten out 82,300, which is a lot of people, admittedly. Almost certainly, this is going to slow down the pace, at least for the next day. And as I said, there's a possibility of more attacks. So that could result in tens of thousands, at least thousands of people not getting out that otherwise would. And they say 250,000 Afghans that might be eligible for US visas based on their history might still be there. And so only a small portion of the total amount have been evacuated, even if in absolute terms, it's a lot of people.
I have confidence that all of the Americans will get out. I do not have confidence that all of the Afghanis that do want to leave are going to be able to. You know, that process is notoriously difficult, and there's all kinds of red tape, like, oh, well, you didn't stamp this, so you don't have this one form, you're at the back of the line again. So I really hope that that's streamlined. If the buck stops here, Biden, then get these people out. The people that want to leave, they should be able to leave.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, our team is going to be watching for more updates on this, but we are going to go to our first break. We come back, we're going to be switching gears and talking a little bit about some of the continued fallout from January 6th. We'll have that for you after this. Glad to be back. I'm here. We've got Viviana as well. We got a lot to talk about, so why don't we jump into this? Since the beginning of this year, the right has wanted to know, who is it that shot Ashley Babbitt? Well, apparently they're about to find out. The police officer who fatally shot Ashley Babbitt, who took part in the pro-Trump invasion of the US Capitol, will reveal his identity for the first time in a televised interview set to air Thursday evening. So just later on today, the mystery will finally be solved. So if you're not familiar with this and why the right cares so much, let's go through the history. Babbitt was part of a mob of Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol, tried to climb through an opening in a broken glass door outside the speaker's lobby, which leads to the House chamber. The officer who was inside the lobby drew his service pistol and shot Babbitt once in the left shoulder, causing her to fall backward onto the floor. She was transported to Washington Hospital Center, where she died. And so she has been lifted up by the right as a martyr who was killed, like, depends on who you talk to and when, by a member of Pence's security detail or Antifa, or it was a false flag or whatever. Personally, I think the reality is dark enough that a member of the Capitol Police shot and killed someone. That seems bad without adding in, you know, aliens and lizard people and stuff like that. But anyway, Viviana, he is going to have this interview. It's with Lester Holt, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, set to air just 3 days after the US Capitol Police Department announced that it would not discipline the officer following an internal investigation. The DOJ also previously said it would not pursue criminal charges against the officer, who at that point their identity had not been disclosed. So we're gonna have an interview. There's no charges, at least as of right now. We'll talk about a few other potential cases, but what do you think about this decision?
The decision to not charge him, or the decision for Lester Holt to interview? I mean, both. I'm glad he didn't get charged. I'm glad he didn't get charged. I think it's pretty expected that if you storm a government building, you're gonna probably get hurt in some way, you know? I've said before that I think that this woman and many of the QAnon supporters that were there on January 6th are, or were, suffering from some sort of mental delusion, some sort of illness where they went along with this group ideology and putting themselves in danger. I mean, you have to really be kind of a little bit off to think that nothing's gonna happen to you when you do it, or unless they were fed information that we are still trying to find out. They were told that nothing would happen to them. The fact that Lester is going to be interviewing this officer, I think, is interesting because we don't hear interviews with officers who are involved in these kinds of fatal shootings all the time. So why this one in particular? You know, I think it's also dangerous for the officer to come forward. So that's a concern for me as well.
Yeah. So look, there's a few different areas of this that I'm interested in. One is, you know, obviously, this cop, at least for the next few years, is gonna have to worry about some crazy right winger murdering them to avenge Ashley Babbitt, who they didn't know and don't know anything about. And so the obvious follow-up question is, so why come out and do this? Well, look, obviously there's potential that it's a money thing or whatever, but I also think it could be that if they have reason to believe that the identity is about to be revealed anyway, why not at least be the one to do it with an interview rather than just having it be, you know, like the opening monologue on Tucker Carlson? Or that once the actual commission, the hearings proceed in the House, that as a result of whatever, either just the normal process or right wing representatives, they might reveal his name. So again, maybe it's like taking control of the timing and the narrative. But no matter what, like after this, this cop obviously is going to have security. Like,
yeah,
the right is out of their mind and is desperate to kill this person. And if they do, Trump is gonna put out some statement about how, people get mad, it's justified. Like, I know, like, it's such a dark time when it comes to political violence. So I don't know.
It is, I think a lot of these Capitol Police officers have tried to come forward to sort of plead with the public, like, hey, especially these Blue Lives Matter people, like, that's what you're all about, right? So they've come forward and been like, we were scared, we were this, and no one cared. Is this interview gonna make a difference for the extreme right? Are they gonna have sympathy for this man who took the life of a woman because he was doing his job? I don't like to see violence from police officers across the board, but there are some times when you can kind of understand how it happened. You know, I think we'll be talking about a case situation later on where you don't understand. And so I think it's important to talk about. I'm glad you're bringing it to light here on your show, John. I just hope there are some people listening who actually see that these cops were, you know, not supported. These Capitol Police officers weren't given the proper support, the people behind them, the weaponry, whatever they needed to protect themselves. It was sort of taken away for some reason. We're gonna find out more, I'm sure, as time goes on. But You know, and you know, my condolences to those who knew Ashley Babbitt. Honestly, I mean, I'm sure you guys are feeling her loss. She sounded like she was a really productive woman. She went down this QAnon pathway like many people have, and it has caused her a lot of pain and suffering. Obviously, it's cost her life, but a lot of pain and suffering for those around her.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people who have chosen this path are having all kinds of issues. They're really angry inside, and yeah, they're not finding that resolution. So let's hope they don't have another January 6th situation.
Yeah. And it, you know, I feel bad again, like, but I feel like Ashley Babbitt didn't need to die, and she died because why? Because Newsmax wanted Mike Lindell to advertise pillows on there, and Tucker Carlson wanted to get you all worked up. It was a whole bunch of grift. They wanted views, they wanted money, so they drove people crazy to get it.
I guarantee that Ashley Babbitt was watching the uprising last summer and saying that those people should have been shot. I guarantee she was watching that footage of people just breaking windows of a Patagonia store and saying that they should be shot and they should be this and that. But she thinks, and others thought, that they would be totally fine to bust into the Capitol, being violent, holding weapons. Yeah. I mean, with a plan, like tactical gear. So there's a disconnect for the, and we already know there's a major disconnect with these QAnon people.
Yeah, and by the way, you mentioned this too. Like one of the reasons I don't like this interview is, like, so far as I have seen with the limited information we have about the actual shooting, the cop doesn't appear to have done anything wrong. But that said, I have no interest in a primetime glorification of a cop killing someone. Like, our country already does way too much of that and assumes that they're always right and couldn't have done anything else. And so whether that might be accurate in this particular case or not, I do not want our country like all coming together and be like, yeah, you know, sometimes cops have to kill people. Let's bear that in mind for next time. I'm not interested in that. And so I don't like any part of this. I don't like the threats that will come the cops' way. I'm not interested in the cops' identity. Ashley Babbitt shouldn't have been there. And I don't like glorifying police violence.
I agree. 100%. You're absolutely right. And I do think that there are things that they could have done they could have thrown, you know, tear gas. They could have done some stuff. I don't know what was going on in this officer's mind, but I don't think it needs to be glorified. Or, you know, if he's getting paid to do it, you know, I get it. We live in under capitalism, and we're gonna have to sort of figure it out amongst this system. But
which I'm guessing not. It doesn't see.
No, he got paid. Yeah.
I would expect.
Or he's got a book deal. He's got something to push,
sure.
John.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's a possibility.
We didn't mention that. So his publisher was like, "Why don't you go on Lester Holt, and then people know who you are, and then they're gonna."
That's true. Well, you only have to wait about 4 hours to find out, actually. In any event, let's move on to more coming out of the 6th. There have been attempts to get documentation that might show any potential connection between Donald Trump, other members of the White House, and those who eventually attacked the Capitol. But most recently, there has been a request for documents that's a bit broader. This is the select committee that's investigating the 6th. They're looking for any communication records between the administration, a former President Donald Trump, and an array of popular far right influencers as well. So it's looking for, let's see, current and former administration and campaign officials like Trump, his children, Mike Pence, Roger Stone. It's doing this request at 8 separate government agencies, the National Archives, the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, as well as a whole bunch of intelligence agencies. And people, you know, as broad as Enrico Tarrio, George Papadopoulos, other right-wing grifters who are involved in Stop the Steal. 9 months of records they're looking into, and this is both communication that might go into the planning of the rally or the march or whatever, as well as, it says, his like mental stability of Donald Trump in the run up to this. So they've got people in the QAnon movement, Michael Flynn, that's great. I'll have to fix that in a minute. God only knows why that happened. My mental state is shaky. No, but so they're basically looking to see all of these different people in the Stop the Steal movement, in QAnon and all that. Was there coordination? So I want to toss it to you, Viviana, both for your reaction and give me time to resolve that.
Yeah, fix your Google screen. You know, it's so frustrating to me, John, because we have had so much blatant evidence that Trump and his cronies rabble roused this crowd, not just on January 6th, but leading up to it, and nothing happens. Nothing is done. Whether he has mental instability or not, he does. Nothing comes out of it. I don't understand it. It's a little bit frustrating. I've said before that there are people on the blue side, there are Democrats who secretly really supported what Trump was doing because they were going to benefit in some way from it. And so I'm not sure that anything is going to come out of, you know, this request for communication records. We've already seen so much, and it just goes away like nothing. It's frustrating. I don't know. I feel like we're going to put more time and invest into this. And it's just bupkis.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? And again, like, do I think that there is a very strong link between Trump's circle, and the circle is obviously very broad. Mike Pence and Roger Stone are both in it, although they're clearly different in some fairly significant ways. Yes. Do I think it's an email from Trump to George Papadopoulos saying attack the Capitol? No, I don't think he did that, and he didn't have to do that. They got those people to go crazy without ever having to specifically ask them to do a specific act of violence. That's how
Trump is a frat boy.
Political violence works.
He's a frat boy. He knows Trump is a frat boy. He knows whether he was in college or not, because he probably was never there. I don't know if he even went, but he's a frat boy of mentality. They know how to bully. They know how to get people on their side. They know how to rabble rouse. And he did just that through his Twitter. I mean, I'm ecstatic that he's not on Twitter anymore, just because it's just a lot more peaceful. But you know, even if there was communication saying attack the Capitol, I would think that they probably still wouldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, the Biden doesn't seem particularly interested in this. But no. That said, despite the fact that the investigations that are going on seem so like lackadaisical, like they're so relaxed, we're gonna give you the reaction from
the Capitol.
Why are you taking that so seriously, Viviana? They only attacked the Capitol, and they're even more in favor of political violence now than they were then. What's the issue? I don't understand it. Anyway, here's what Trump had to say. He put out a statement implying that he will not be abiding by the request for records, saying, "Unfortunately, this partisan exercise is being performed at the expense of longstanding legal principles of privilege." Guaranteeing that he did not write any of this.
He did not
write. Executive privilege will be defended, not just on behalf of my administration and the patriots who worked beside me, but on back. Wait, so did they work beside you, all these people that attacked the Capitol? But blah, blah, blah. These Democrats only have one tired trick, political theater, and their latest request only reinforces that pathetic reality.
And I love John.
He doesn't seem like he's going to abide by it. And honestly, if he doesn't, what are they going to do? They're gonna do
absolutely nothing.
I think so. Yeah.
Did he not write that? He also hasn't read it. So that's
true.
I don't know who wrote it.
I hope he's watching.
He's not.
Anyway, now Viviana, while there are no consequences for him, that does not mean that there were no consequences for anyone involved in all of this. So this is where we're gonna turn to now. Some of those involved formally or informally with the Trump legal effort to overturn the election in the run up to the inauguration are facing some consequences and might well face some more. A US judge has just ruled that Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell, the pro-Trump attorneys who sued Michigan officials over false claims they broke state election law and manipulated the vote, will have to pay the defendants legal fees and face sanctions over unethical behavior. And the judge was not having any of their BS. This is Linda V. Parker said, Powell and Wood had engaged in a historic and profound abuse of the judicial process. Their claims made against Gretchen Whitmer, the city of Detroit, and state election officials were not just flimsy and unfounded, alleging a massive and implausible conspiracy to steal the election, but actively harmful. She says this case was never about fraud. It was about undermining the people's faith in our democracy and debasing the judicial process to do so. And so as a result of this order, it grants the defendant's motion for unspecified sanctions, instructs the attorneys to pay any fees incurred by their litigation, and instructs the lawyers to complete at least 12 hours of legal education within the next 6 months on election law and pleading standards. The order also refers them for potentially further disciplinary action, including disbarment, which we know already happened to Rudy Giuliani. As an example of how nonsensical their case was, Parker provided numerous instances of what she termed legal abuse. In one example, the lawyers claimed to have evidence that votes were changed by election workers. Asked for evidence, they presented an affidavit from a woman who said only that, quote, "I believe some of these workers were changing votes." Asked if that woman had actually seen it, quote, "The court was met with silence." Well, come on, I could do that. Like, hire me as your lawyer. Why are you getting people that technically went to law school to do this nonsense?
It reminds me of that Ferris Bueller line where it was like, my cousin's dating this girl who knows a girl who has her brother was at Baskin Robbins and saw him faint last night. It's like so much hearsay. I think they all should be disbarred, I'll be honest. Because when they did this, Trump was telling him, I'll protect you, I'll pay for the fees, I'll do this and that. Of course, he's not gonna do any of that. They were stupid to think it. And they put their own law, you know, license on the line to go up there and say such lies, blatant lies. They should be disbarred. That's your business, to uphold the law, not to go into court and lie to a judge. If you or I did that, we'd be done. We'd be done. I mean, we'd be in contempt of court, we'd be in jail. These guys, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, I would like to know how much those legal fees are, because that could be a lot of money. And we'll see, maybe they can crowdfund it or whatever, but we saw how that's working out for Rudy Giuliani. He raised like $5,000 or something. They could be in some significant trouble. Now, the reason I wanted to make sure that we talked about this story though was there. So in the wake of the whole period running up to the 6th and then the actual attack, we've had months and months and months have gone by, and it has felt very often as if America was shown how far the right is willing to go. And then America showed the right, we will do basically nothing to stop you from doing this again. And so my fear has been that they will inevitably do this again. Yeah. And so what I would have liked to have seen was something stronger against Trump, against all the people that organized this, who bust people in there to attack the Capitol, all of that. We're not getting that stuff. But if at least some of the legal challenges to the elections lead to people being fined for millions and losing their ability to practice law, maybe that will make those sorts of challenges a little bit less common in the wake of future elections. And so far, if that's all the consequences we have, at least we have that, I guess.
It's sad though that these low-level people are gonna be the ones paying the price when they were doing it at the behest of others.
That's true, yeah. Well, we keep trying to point out to these people that you can't trust Trump and you shouldn't do his dirty work because he's just gonna cast you aside. I guess why do I think that this would influence people? None of the other stuff has. No. Thank you for pointing
that out. Well, what's sad is this is the whole point, is to create doubt, and it's created doubt on both sides. You know, there really has. I hate to say both sides now because it has a negative that's a negative feeling to it. But you know, we know there's been evidence that the CIA and the FBI has uncovered that the Russians specifically have come, they want to create this doubt amongst the population here in the United States to not have faith in their own election, their own political system. And this is just continuing to play that out. And I don't think that's gonna stop. I mean, it's been happening, I think, as long as almost 10 years now that they've been really, and it's really gotten rooted with Facebook and all of that. And we keep going back and forth with the controls that Facebook's gonna be placing. But you know, it's scary. It actually is scary, because once you start having doubt in your elections and those kinds of things, it gets to be a little bit anarchy in a country. You need to have some faith.
You do. And we're losing. And sure, you know, I'm sure that those efforts do continue. I don't know, maybe this is like a silver lining of all the nonsense on the right. Like, there ain't no way that Tucker Carlson's doing more damage to democracy, or that Russia is doing more damage than Tucker Carlson is doing. Like, every single day, the Fox News and Newsmax is causing people to turn against
democracy. I disagree a little bit, actually. I mean, Tucker's doing a lot of damage, but he's really talking to one side. There's not a lot of, you know, Democrats tuning into to look at what he's saying. But the misinformation on social media is really heavy, and it's still going on. I mean, about COVID, about the vaccine. And this is the kind of stuff that's having an effect on people who wouldn't necessarily watch Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
So that, to me, he's dangerous, but I think that the misinformation is even more dangerous.
Okay. By the way, just want to throw out there, this news sort of broke right before the show, but in addition to all of this other stuff about the 6th, There are 7 officers from the US Capitol Police that are suing Donald Trump, Roger Stone, and members of far right like extremist groups for saying that they conspired to accomplish the violence that was done against the Capitol Police on the 6th. We'll be finding out more details about those cases, and I'm sure covering them in the future. But understand that that's also another thread that will be going.
Is that a civil suit?
Oh, I will have to get back.
It reminds me of OJ was acquitted or found not guilty. I forget which one it was, but there was a civil suit that he lost. Sure. And so it's interesting to see how that's going to play out, because they may be awarded damages from a civil suit, but yet no consequences for criminality on his part. So
that's possible. We'll
keep
see.
Us posted, John.
Look forward to. We will. Okay, with that, we are going to take a break. When we come back, though, we're going to be checking in on the pandemic, how things are going in Florida. I think you could probably guess, but we'll be back in a few. Okay, we've got a little bit of time left in this first hour. I think we can get through these 2 stories during that time. So let's launch into this next one. Ron DeSantis, he's made some missteps. I don't mean when I say that for Florida necessarily, because I know that he doesn't care about that whatsoever. But it's possible that some of the moves he's made on the pandemic are going to hurt the one thing that he does care about, and that is his political aspirations. So let's jump into the damage that he's doing to both and how. So first of all, how did he do this? Well, earlier this year, Ron DeSantis signed a bill into law that banned local governments, including school districts, from issuing rules about masking, despite a recommendation from the CDC that every school in the nation require masking to prevent students and staff from contracting and spreading the deadly virus. After several school districts said that they would keep their masking rules in place, DeSantis threatened to withhold the pay of district officials in punishment for their defiance, even though they were acting in the interest of public health. Now, since then, the Biden administration has said that it will aid those districts by paying for any penalties DeSantis imposes on them. So that is a good move. But what you have basically is Ron DeSantis turning all of his attention to these antibody like treatment plays that he's setting up, which seems perfectly fine. But when you are a part of this right wing movement that has decided that, you know, appealing to your base by stopping localities from doing something about the pandemic, that that's more important than saving people's lives, I'm gonna have a problem with it, especially when your state ends up doing so poorly. Now, how does this impact what he really cares about himself? Well, 59% of those in Florida surveyed said they want their current governor to sit out the next presidential contest, including 61% of independents. Obviously, Democrats have no interest in him becoming president. And overall, it appears to actually be hurting his approval numbers. 47% of respondents said they approve of the governor's job performance, while 45% disapprove. It's still way too good, but his pre-pandemic high was 59% in March of 2019. Now, his lowest was 41%. That was in July of last year when Florida was doing pretty rough when it came to the pandemic. Right now, he's still a few points above that. But bear in mind that it is worse in Florida right now than it was at that peak back last year. More people in Florida are now catching the coronavirus, being hospitalized of it, and dying of it than at any previous point in the pandemic. And I want to show you some charts. Take a look at the cases. It is way above what it was in the past waves. Hospitalizations have far eclipsed any past wave as well. And even the deaths are now higher than they were at the worst points. And I want you to briefly really think about how much needs to go wrong for you to be able to exceed the worst suffering of last year. We have so many vaccinated people that we didn't have, including older people, even in places like Florida. There's a good number of people that are vaccinated, despite, you know, the lack of advocacy from the right wing there. A lot of people are vaccinated. We understand the virus far better than we did. We have access to masks. We know that we're supposed to socially distance. But despite that, Viviana, it's worse than it's ever been. That is madness to me that it could have gotten this bad.
I mean, it's a testament to what vaccines do and how we can prevent it. But keep in mind, they've also been anti-mask for, you know, a good year and a half now. And that is a wonderful method to prevent infections. One thing, going back to his approval numbers, gives me a little bit of faith because it shows me that regardless of your political affiliation, I think at the end of the day, the majority of people want leaders whose ego doesn't dictate legislation. And that's what's happening with DeSantis. He's saying, well, he's being stubborn about it. And I think that there are reasonable people out there who are saying, actually, let's take a beat. Let's not just be out there like a bully. And so they're getting turned off by this. Not to mention, obviously, the numbers of illness and death. And we have this, you know, long-term COVID effects as well that people are still feeling. You know, Trump went out there and said, it's no big deal, it's no big deal. But if you had COVID last year and you're still having trouble breathing now, you're starting to think it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, he might say that it's not a big deal, but how much do we see him? How much do we see his? I want to see him walk briskly.
He couldn't do that before, John.
Yeah, that's not a fair. I apologize. That was an anti-science thing to ask for. Honestly, it wouldn't prove anything. But anyway, so look, with Ron DeSantis, it's bad there. It is almost certainly going to get worse. The case numbers aren't as bad as they were a few days ago, but they're still drastically up. There's a lot of people in the hospital. And so what lesson has Ron DeSantis learned? Well, this is a headline from yesterday. Ron DeSantis wants Biden to follow Florida's lead on COVID. Okay, I really do not want us to follow anything having to do with their lead on COVID because it's devastating. I don't want California to end up like that. And I just want to remind people of this Politico headline from last year. Or from the very beginning of this year, how Ron DeSantis won the pandemic on Politico. And there's this whole section, I'm not gonna read the whole thing, but about like, well, I don't know about these Democrats. They were talking about DeSantis and Death Santis, but now it's looking like he kind of won. Is he? Did he?
It's the same people that were arguing that Sweden figured it out as well. They want to say, well, you just need to lose half a million people, a million people, and then the pandemic's done. And the argument that, you know, well, because this is a lot going on right now. You're vaccinated, you could still get it. You're vaccinated, you could still spread it. But what people are not looking at is the less people that get vaccinated gives the virus more of a chance to mutate and become other variants like the Delta. Who knows what's going to happen next? It'll become more aggressive and could even hurt us further. So it's this misinformation, this ego bravado from DeSantis is scary for the state of Florida. And you know, my only hope is somehow this turns Florida blue. That's my only hope.
Yeah, I we'll see. Again, like his numbers are going down once again. The connection between what politicians do, the effects of their actions, and what people think about them is so tenuous. It is incredibly frustrating, but we saw it last year in Florida. Things are worse now than they were then. So theoretically, like this should hang around his neck for the rest of his career. We'll see. That would be the barest minimum justice considering so much needless loss of life. But we'll see. We'll see. It seems to be affecting him now. And I don't know, maybe if he starts to think that this might hurt him in 2024 running for the presidency, if he somehow comes to that conclusion, that might be the only thing that gets him to actually take this seriously. And that's what's needed to save so many lives in Florida. We are running low on time in this first hour, so we are going to jump into a very different topic. As has become a real pattern now, graphic body camera footage that was held in secret for a couple of years is showing that a cop devastatingly beat someone. A black motorist attacked back in May 2019 that resulted in Aaron Larry Bowman having a broken jaw, 3 broken ribs, a broken wrist, a gash on his head that required 6 staples to close. Now, how bad was it? Like, you should know from that, the footage makes it very real. So we're gonna show you the footage, but understand there's a reason why they didn't want people to see this for so long. It is obviously very graphic, so consider yourself warned. But here is a bit of that footage from back in May 2019.
I'm not resisting. Give me your hand. Give me your hand. They hit me in the head with a flashlight. I haven't did nothing, man. I'm on dialysis, man. You hurt me.
That is absolutely devastating to watch. The cop is Jacob Brown, jumped out of his car, ran over to Aaron Larry Bowman, who had already been restrained, and instantaneously began beating him with an 8-inch aluminum flashlight reinforced with a pointed end to shatter car glass. It says he hit him 18 times in 24 seconds, despite the fact multiple cops had already restrained him. This is a cop who, and we'll talk about his past before that, but this is a guy who was desperate for an opportunity to beat someone that was restrained. I think that's very clear from this footage. Viviana, what'd you think? That's the cop right there that you're seeing right now.
It's horrific. I mean, it's upsetting to watch. I mean, the guy was just with a mag light. I mean, those things are heavy. Broke his arm, broke his wrist, gashed his head open. What's concerning to me is his justification for it, and even more concerning is how this was hidden for so long. You know, this is what the problem is when we're talking about our current policing system and the qualified, what is it, immunity. Yeah. We cannot be protecting them to this point where they're endangering the public. I don't care what this man did. There's a way to take people into custody without beating the holy life out of them. I mean, we've seen with these, you know, young white gun massacre people that go to Burger King afterwards. We got to figure out another method here, people. This guy is a monster, this cop, Brown. Obviously, he knew he's a monster. He hid his behavior. I mean, this is criminal. Will we see these criminal charges?
Well, look, the defense attorney for Bowman, the victim here, was told initially there was no body camera video. Whoops. I goofed. How do you not go to you're going to jail for that? Like, honestly, the people who destroy the footage, who hide the footage, like, they're gonna keep doing that until there are consequences for it, and there are seemingly no consequences for it. So everything that you saw there is devastating. We have some more context about that particular area, as well as his past. So you might recall a video of Ronald Green. We showed this footage a couple of months ago. It was another black motorist who was dragged from his car and beaten. The family was lied to, said that he got the injuries from a car crash, which did not happen. They were 3 weeks apart in the same area. So to give you an idea of the cops in this area. Brown in particular, let's see, not only failed to report his use of force, but mislabeled his footage as a citizen encounter. He had 23 use of force incidents dating to 2015. So in a 4-year period, 23 use of force incidents, 19 of them targeting black people, just coincidentally. So here's a hypothetical for you, America. What if you have a country filled up with hardcore racists, and you tell them, hey, if you'd like, we have a job for you that you can take, and we will pay you. And a couple dozen times in a few years, you can beat the hell out of people that you hate. Who do you think that's gonna attract? Well, we see, we know the pattern. We know the individuals that they go for this sort of job. And they're protected by other cops, they're protected by the cops union. The whole thing is dragged out by years to even find out what happened in the footage. And so I'm sure this guy is going to suffer some legal consequences. There's so much here, but is that gonna do anything to make the next footage less likely? Anyway, final thoughts, Viviana. I know we don't have much time.
Just really, I wanna know how this all came to light finally. I need to find some more information about this. The culture of violence for the police, and in particular this area, is really scary.
Yeah. 100%. Okay, well, if you're watching on our linear platform, I apologize. We are basically out of time. Thank you for being here. If you're watching on Twitch or on YouTube, we do have some more news to talk about. It's gonna be a little bit lighter in some ways, the only ways it ever really is on TDR, but it's coming up. We're gonna take a short break. We'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.